6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined by a co-host who is beyond certainly adequate when healthy, Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you for the compliment. I will take it. You can get them these days.
Like, that's a compliment, right? I mean, that's how Rutherford described the blue line for the Vancouver Canucks, is certainly adequate when healthy.
Yeah. I mean, just like damned by faint praise. I mean, I guess we have to believe that, right? Like, the season's about to start and they didn't really beef up anywhere on the blue line, so I guess it's adequate.
The answer was looking at them all along. It's Quinn Hughes. But
yeah,
we're already getting into rewind and we haven't even done the introduction. I'm not going to complain about Rutherford calling the spade as it actually happens to be. I think we're unaccustomed to this. And I'm not going to make a big deal out of him saying that the blue line is certainly adequate.
Yeah, but I mean,
maybe I am. I don't know. I totally want our podcast to be certainly adequate.
I love that too. But like, on the one hand, it's great that he's professionally honest, but I'm also like, you couldn't have tried harder then to deal some of our problem contracts and beef up our defense.
But like, I mean, in that interview with PJ, the way it's sort of like posited is like JT Miller, first place, a collection of, young stars, runner up, blue line participation trophy.
Hey, we love participation trophies. My generation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in my generation, we got a ribbon at Sports Day for taking part.
I never did. Yeah. They talk about millennial participation trophies, but I don't know. No one.
I got one. I could have been in the entire sports day, 20 different sports, one ribbon for showing up. The only people who had more than one ribbon were the ones who finished first, second, or third.
Yeah, see, we only got first, second, third, which meant I got nothing. I am not into athletics. Give me team sports any day. I do not want to throw, run, or jump.
Sports.
Yeah.
But we are here to talk about this phenomenal preseason where the Vancouver Canucks are doing their best to get a participation trophy. And obviously, it is the preseason, so everything I am saying with a grain of salt. We'll talk a little bit about who has impressed us so far, any bright spots or what have you. Before we dive into a segment that we often call half full, half empty, but quite frankly, it could also be the F word, because Hockey Canada, it's like that festering bag of trash that you know you need to get rid of, only to get rid of and find out there's something festering even below that. Worse. That's what's going on with the Hockey Canada executive.
Yeah, I didn't think you were going to say the word trash there, by the way. Thought it was another word beginning with T.
No. See, this is a G-rated podcast.
It's G-rated-ish.
Right? I mean, what do you think? I am Bowman here? No. Just dropping the bombs?
Left, right, and center, yeah.
But no, we got a whole lot to get into. So let's dive into Rewind. So just to give you an idea, for some reason you haven't been on social media, you haven't really paying attention to the news, you don't listen to sports radio or any of the 142 Canucks podcasts that might be out there, the preseason hasn't been going too well for the Vancouver Canucks. In fact, I think the end of last week you had poll questions about whether or not tonight's matchup against the Oilers, which is currently in progress and not going very well for Vancouver, was a must-win game. When has there ever been must-win hockey in the freaking preseason.
I really hope that was tongue-in-cheek. It's funny. Like, I am, as always, like, the extremes are out there. You know, you've got people saying, this doesn't matter at all. Which, of course, it doesn't. But I saw that Matt Sakaris had read, like, written an article for Daily Hive about how these preseason losses shouldn't be concerning. And I was like, great, I'm going to read this and feel better. But his reasoning was basically, NFL and MLB don't like their preseasons either, and the points don't count. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm that comforted by that.
Mm.
Like, it's not the end of the world, but...
Well, the funny thing...
Let's see that.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing about the Vancouver Canucks being in a must-win game is the roster that made its way to Edmonton to play this evening. Not the most... How would I say it? Stellar group of individuals.
No, I mean, there's some
pretty good depth players that are there right now.
That's a backbone of our middle six right there, Chris.
Well, I mean, you know, what was it that you had mentioned in the last episode? Is like, oh yeah, that roster tonight are all the people not making the team. And one might suggest that most of who's in Edmonton tonight will probably enjoy a lot of their time playing in Abbotsford, if in Abbotsford at all.
It's true. It does seem a little like the players get sent to Alberta as a punishment in preseason. As in, you're not making the team, let's send you to Alberta to play. But... I mean, I'm kidding, of course, because, I mean, Garland and Podkolzin are there trying to cement their spots. Hoglander, who seems to be doing well tonight. Christian Wolinen, who just, like, everyone remembers that, like, great depth players suddenly all over the ice, kind of good and bad. But, yeah, I mean, Petey's not there, Quinn's not there, JT's not there, like, Bo's not there, like... It's not the stars of the opening night roster, but yeah. Whereas, like, Edmonton have Connor McDavid, enough said.
I understand that they're good.
Yeah, well, Connor McDavid's good.
Yeah, just looking, you know, through the roster, you know, one might say, well, Seelos has made the trip, and he's considered to be the goaltender of the future. There are some who are suggesting that if it was a fair fight, he might try to steal the backup job from Spencer Martin, which would be a horrible idea. He wants Seelos to further develop. He's currently keeping the bench warm.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because Colin Delia is the one who's in the net, so.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've been super impressed by what Colin Daly has put out there, but...
I saw two goals tonight, and, I mean, Edmonton currently has four, and the two I saw were like, you know, I kind of think you could have maybe stopped
that. And let's be real, like, we aren't shocked to learn that there's also been some defensive errors from the Vancouver Canucks, meaning, like... Dylan Holloway and Zach Hyman, like, open on the back door isn't the best move. Yeah, yeah. Colin Delia's been okay, not great.
That's why you got a goaltender.
So unseasoned. But, like, I'm not a big Jack Campbell fan, but he, according to Twitter, he just made a 5-alarm save just now, so what do I know? Like, Edmonton goalie problems, right? We'll see if they get resolved, but... Yeah, Edmonton's roster is a lot closer than Vancouver's right now. I'm just wondering how close do we get before we get concerned, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned. I like it's the preseason, and at some point in time, the amount of concern that we should probably have will be in December. I mean, who knows? We might be getting concerned October, November. I won't deny that. But real concern is December, because at that point in time, you have a really good idea of sort of your trajectory, and failing a coaching shift that suddenly takes your team in an entirely different direction. You know, things generally sort themselves out. It should be noted that Edmonton has a former Vancouver Canuck by the name of JV19 on their roster tonight. All 8 minutes and 5 seconds of JV19. Not to be confused with the JV18 character.
Yeah, I think they're both shady characters, though. Less said about him, the better overall, but by all accounts, not a stellar showing once again.
No. Looking like a player who doesn't make the team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's PTO too, so it's not like, oh, hey, let's send you down to where the heck is the Oilers farm team? Is it a Californian franchise?
California Bakersfield Condors?
Was it? Okay. But yeah. Anywho.
Yeah, with two preseason games left against Oilers and Coyotes, you would hope that by Friday we might get a look at what the opening night roster will look like. I just think people took Bruce a little too at his word when he said he was going to run like regular season lines in preseason.
He has totally run regular season lines in the preseason, you know.
Yeah, I guess this
few
was
minutes every pre, few games.
This was also pre Brock Besser getting injured, so he probably decided, yeah, that was a terrible idea. Let's not do that.
Well, I mean, it's not like Brock got an opportunity to play a game.
No.
So there was no regular season lineup, including Brock Besser, ever iced during the preseason. And based on the result of his successful surgery, he should be back on the ice in 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he may be skating on the ice before that, but
he's skating today. He was holding a stick.
Ooh.
He was moving the puck with said stick.
Okay.
According to JPAT, he took video.
I'm shocked he wasn't in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Wait, this isn't the NFL and it's not the Miami Dolphins. My bad.
Right.
Sorry. If you don't understand the reference there, don't go and look at the video of a quarterback who should not have been in the game.
Okay. I will not.
Yeah. Just to, you know, point out, though, imagine if this was regular season lineup. Like, then there's maybe some validity to the must-win poll. But I honestly don't think we're going to see a regular season lineup until that last game.
Yeah,
it's home against Arizona, right? Like, you don't – if you're gonna put something together, that's where you do it, because then you're on the road for five, so.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I guess what you take from preseason is individual performances, right? So, Kuzmenko's been good. Hogman's been good.
Quinn can play hockey on the right.
Yeah, I know. We're all shocked to learn that one of the best defenders in the league can also switch sides and still be pretty good.
Yeah.
He seemed to have fun doing that, so sure.
Well, I mean, imagine if he didn't. It wouldn't really matter. I mean,
so I can't imagine really actually Quinn feeling any emotion, really.
What are you talking about? He you can read his face. He's full of so much, you know, effervescence.
Effervescence. Good word.
Yes. You know, leading up to this must-win game here in Edmonton, because, again, it's must-win in the preseason and all, the Vancouver Canucks, you know, didn't do so hot there in Seattle or in Vancouver against Seattle. You could say that, well, it wasn't that bad here in Vancouver. Like, you know, Kraken, you know, beat them in overtime. Okay, fine, whatever. Fight their way back into that one. But that if there is some concern, it's the comments from some veteran players after the performance in Seattle that's suggesting we're not. What was it? I think it was Shen that had said it. Was it Shen or? Who am I thinking
to say what he said, and then I'll figure it out.
It was that we're not playing hard to play against. I mean, it was like the implication being that players aren't taking the preseason seriously.
Yeah, I don't know. I know I'm the one that started this by saying, like, that, you know, maybe I'm a bit concerned about certain areas, but I think it's so funny that they're getting the hockey cliches out the way, and it's preseason. It's just like, we have to do better, and it's like, ah.
Well, I'm not, like, I mean, again, preseason doesn't worry me. It's only when players who've been around the game as long as they have. Yeah, you're right. Maybe it is cliche. But the fact that they're willing to go and bring out the cliche so early. And not in the positive sense, is, you know, there's a bunch of guys fighting for jobs and, you know, Seattle's a tough team or a tough opponent. I mean, you know who tough opponent was? It was Boy, the new mascot.
Yeah. Oh, what a missed opportunity, eh? Like, why do they not have a giant squid?
Well, there is a little bit of a squid on, or kraken on his ear. Apparently there's a tentacle hanging from it.
I mean, whatever, the fans had input, so choose whatever you want. But
and I don't know Seattle, like, but apparently the troll of Fremont Street is apparently a thing. It's Fremont Street. It's apparently a thing, so.
Okay. Maybe it means something to Seattle. I don't get it. We'll see. It just seems like an anticlimax because we waited a whole season for that.
Okay. On the topic of mascots, then, what about Finn? What are your thoughts on Finn?
I'm pro Finn. Like, I am hashtag Team Finn. I think he gets a harsh rap by people. I think we should be grateful for Finn.
But, you know, with Finn, and this is going to tie into what we were talking about last episode with the fact that Orca Bay Sports Entertainment logo was all over those seats. The Orca Bay Sports Entertainment organization named a team that was titled Vancouver Canucks and logoed it after themselves, the parent company. They named their mascot Finn so that they could have an orca. Now, I get that orcas are Pacific Northwest sort of thing.
Well, right? Literally, they were just in the Georgia Strait this morning, like the body of water, not the
They're always newspaper. There.
I know, but just they popped up. So orcas.
Well, then why not call, like, have a humpback as a, or a fin whale named Finn?
You could, like.
Or a minky or a blue whale, which, I mean, that's more so well off the coast. Gray whales come, like, heck, we've only had a beluga in the Pacific Northwest like a handful of times, and it heads down to Seattle for some reason.
Yeah, we had them in the aquarium, though.
Okay, true. I mean, could have been a river otter. Cutest little suckers.
They are very cute. I feel like a mascot river otter would not be cute, though.
I'm sure there are, like, got to be a team out there with an otter as a mascot. I mean, there's a mascot otter. Otters, it's the
probably.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah. Anyhow, we digress. That's, again, how awesome the preseason has been.
Yeah, like, until we lose a regular season game against Seattle, I'm not going to take them seriously as a
one
team.
Of those midweek, marquee matchups.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I just literally watched the first period highlights on the broadcast, and it was bad. They're still bad, I think. So I think we're okay.
Speaking of bad, unfortunately, a number of players were cut by the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, that's harsh. They might not have been bad, but they weren't good enough to stick around for a trip to Edmonton. A number of players were released from PTOs, Vincent Harsinot, Mark Gatton, Chase Wooters, and Matt Alfaro. An ATO contract release was Michael Ragusch. Jet Wu was assigned to Abbotsford. And then over the course of the weekend, Alex Canuck-Leppert was released from his PTO, sent to Abbotsford. Quinn Gieman, he went to Abbotsford. And Carson Vogt. Is that? Or Vogt?
It's Vogt. It's also Chase Waters.
Chase Waters? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And
many apologies. I know you listen to our show. They're all going to Abbotsford, so. I mean, yeah. It's interesting. I mean,
honestly, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's interesting that, you know, these players were like, hey, you're off to Abbotsford already, when there was this one game at Edmonton. Like, the Canucks don't seem to be as in tune with most of the other teams as to who they're placing on waivers. Like, for instance, the Seattle Kraken placed Cole Lynn on waivers. The Vancouver Canucks could go and take him back. Yeah, reclaim what was once theirs.
Legend, Cole Lynn. I mean, Abbotsford training camp starts. I guess they want them there for that, since they're not making the team.
I guess.
A lot of those players, I think they could have really good seasons. Chase Waters had a good season already. Jet Wu had the start of a good season, you know. I like Alex Canuck-Leipert, and not just because his name kind of sounds like Canuck. Quinn Schneeman seemed to be good in camp. He's the new signing, so who knows. But I think a lot of those players could be really interesting in Abbotsford. And Vincent Arsenault is always fun because he's just like kind of rock 'em sock 'em, plays with his heart type player. He's never going to be a run-of-the-mill NHLer, but he's a great leader in Abbotsford. So.
Got to have guys that are good in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of something else that'll be in Abbotsford, the Vancouver Canucks, when they take on the Edmonton Oilers on Wednesday, tonight was a must-win game, a must-win game in the preseason, the Vancouver Canucks currently down 5-2 in Edmonton with only a couple of minutes left in the third period. Spoiler alert if for some reason you hadn't watched that game. And then wrapping it up, as we already talked about, against the Coyotes at home in Vancouver on Friday. We're going to take ourselves a quick break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I don't know, it was like a month and a half ago or something, we were going off on the fact that Hockey Canada had a fund called the National Equity Fund, which is just a BS name for a slush bucket to cover up sexual assault claims instead of insurance. And there were quite a few people, rightfully so, just appalled. A number of provincial organizations expressed concern about this. You had obviously a moment of unity in the Canadian Parliament where politicians of every stripe were like, yeah, no, this is bad. That doesn't happen. Like, you know how screwed up things have to be for them all to say, yeah, this ain't good. We all agree.
Yeah. And even you've got NHL Kale McCarr commenting on it not being good. And for a hockey player, those were strong words.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, hearing this, we're talking about this, like, you know, Hockey Canada had reached a real new level of low. Like, there is a bar, and I actually don't know if the bar is above ground. It has gone below ground at this point. There's no way it could become any worse than this. And so it has, because there's not just one fund, there's two funds. And not only that, the second fund is not something that Hockey Canada volunteered during their testimony to the parliamentary committee. It is not one that they were forthcoming about when the parliamentary committee had asked very pointed questions as to how they are paying for cover-ups. I mean, I don't know how to describe them as anything other than that. And, you know, through the efforts of a number of people, including, you know, Rick Westhead, guess what? This second fund does exist. And, you know, at this point in time, I have no clue what Hockey Canada thinks they can do to to recover from this. Like, they already were having significant trust issues. And outside of Brendan Moore stepping down and Andrew Skinner taking his place, at this point in time, the entire executive just has to say, yeah, you know, we done messed up. We're out. And that, I don't think, is going to be enough. Like, I would not be shocked if there wasn't actually legislative implementation of some form of mechanic that guts Hockey Canada.
Yeah, I just keep saying, like, I keep coming back, and I feel like I've tweeted this line hundreds and hundreds of times, at long last, have you no decency? Because every time you think that the lowest low has been reached, there's something else. We can't look at this as anything other than misleading, attempting to mislead a parliamentary committee. If you're being investigated over wrongdoing relating to one slush fund and you don't disclose another one that you have, that's just lying. And we can't say that then it's getting any better if that's what the new leadership are doing.
Yeah. The interesting piece about this as well is that Hockey Canada hasn't simply ignored the discovery of said fund. They've now, you know, responded in saying that it's inaccurate to report that the Participants Legacy Trust Fund, which is an interesting name for its purpose,
right,
was used to settle sexual assault claims, and any suggestion otherwise is false. Oh, okay. So somehow there was a misunderstanding? The trust was established to cover uninsured claims between September 1986 and August 1995 for Hockey Canada members, but has never been used for any purpose and is not a Hockey Canada asset. So, interesting here. So, it's for uninsured claims, which wasn't the equity fund meant to be used for, and it just happened to be that, you know, sexual assault was one of the big things they were dealing with. But the fact that their statement says it was established for uninsured claims between this state and this state for Hockey Canada members, but has never been used for any purpose and is not a Hockey Canada asset. So you established a fund that was to do something, but it was never used, and you don't have the money anymore because it's not an asset. I don't get that part. Anyway, they go on to say Hockey Canada is not aware of any members having individual or collective funds that were used to settle any sexual misconduct claims. Sure, you got your head in the dirt, so therefore you know nothing.
Yeah, and it's been proven that over the years, and even up until recently, they're still refusing to disclose to MPs who are looking for more information about their financial history and their financial assets, and they're refusing to cooperate. So
the Minister of Sport, the Federal Minister of Sport, I believe she had said that they would be looking to conduct an audit of Hockey Canada's finances to ensure no, you know, federal funding, sports funding went to any of these funds, which honestly, I don't know how you can. I mean, I know accounting says money here goes there, but in the grand scheme of thing, there's a pocket that all this comes out of. I can't imagine that, one, this doesn't happen. Two, it's not expanded. And three, Hockey Canada doesn't see its funding cut, which has a trickle-down effect. Mm-hmm. Because that's not going to impact just what we see as mismanagement and this poorly run organization called Hockey Canada in the sense of, toxicity in the sport and culture. It's going to impact youth programs that have great value, women's hockey programs that have great value. Like, there are some phenomenal programs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there is a way for the funding to insulate these from really the rot on the bone.
Yeah, I don't know either. I threw an idea into Discord and I haven't thought it through, but all these sexual assault claims, they're against the Canadian men's team and junior men's team, right? Should they be allowed to keep competing at these banner tournaments that, you know, are so important to Hockey Canada?
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know how the federal government were to stop that, short of, removing funding for travel or anything that might any of the support yes. functions. Sponsorship dollars, though, are a big thing. When we talked about this over the course of the summer and many of the big logos had started to withdraw support, there was also concern as to what attendance would look like. And we saw that the World Juniors in Edmonton had some of the poorest attendance that Canada has ever seen. There were some asterisks, summer, out of rhythm. So, like, is this truly a public condemnation, or is it just a calendar issue? I don't know if this doesn't result in now public condemnation. And that will hurt the entire organization the most. But probably what hurts them even more is if player registrations were to cease.
Yeah.
And again, that's a shame. Like, I'm not suggesting you as a parent go and say, I'm not going to have my child involved. That's a decision you make. And I would support you one way or the other. If you were to say, no, my son or my daughter or whomever, they're going to participate. Great. Right. That's a you decision. It's just that I feel that if that were to occur, I mean, hockey is Canada's sport, and Hockey Canada is almost doing everything in its power to try to ruin it.
I mean, I'll be honest, and this can sort of segue into something else I wanted to talk about, but is misogyny and sexism and sexual assault a societal issue? Yes. But there is something about hockey that enables it, I would say, because of the way hockey is viewed in Canada, because Canadian small towns are so isolated from other places that often they're, you know, post-industrial towns, stuff like that. So the junior team is like the center of their existence. Boys get idolized. They get away with things they shouldn't. The boys are kind of isolated from mainstream society in that way. Women become objects. Boys get away with what they want. So I do think that it's not just Hockey Canada, it's the Hockey Canada, CHL, and sort of everything that comes under that umbrella. And honestly, the NHL has its own burden to bear on that. It's something they need to take responsibility for. But yeah, I just to segue into what I wanted to talk about, which was Black Ice, the documentary I saw at VIF last week, and that was about racism in hockey in Canada. And it sort of started with the coloured hockey leagues and went to, you know, the experience of players today, including Soraya Tinker, Akeem Alou, Anthony Duclair, PK Subban, and their experience of racism in hockey, which was extensive, right? And I do think that, again, that kind of special status that hockey enjoys and the sort of nature of Canada as a country does allow that to flourish.
You know, I can't provide a counterpoint to that, because, you know, what you share is very salient. I mean, you know, prior to that segue, I was actually thinking, like, oh yeah, no, I could totally describe the scenario you're sharing. I mean, my first true interaction in a junior Canadian junior hockey environment in a small town in Vancouver Island, what you described, I witnessed with my own eyes, and I was like blown away. Like, this is nuts. Two, these are kids. And I mean, I wasn't that much older. Like, I was maybe 4 or 5 years older, but then to sort of think about the culture that allowed for this type of environment to be established and what it in turn would do if we apply to that to the, you know, the greater society. So to, you know, get back on point here, I actually had not heard of this documentary until I saw it in the rundown, and I Googled it. I was like, oh, it's at TIFF. I wonder how you saw it. But you had said it was at the Vancouver International Film Festival as well. Is it still because VIF goes on for another few days, I believe, right?
Yeah, another week or 6 days. I think there is one more showing of Black Ice, if you can get to it. Like, really, really strongly encourage you to. It was, yeah, well worth seeing. Obviously, it's a difficult watch. Like, yeah, it's on Thursday. There's a late showing on Thursday of it. There was moments of hope in there, for sure. There was a great moment from Wayne Simmonds actually talking to some youth hockey players, you know, referring to the history of the Coloured Hockey League, saying, you know, don't let anyone tell you you don't belong in the sport. We've been here over 100 years playing the sport. Don't, like, you are meant to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Which was beautiful, but it's just horrible that needs to be said and emphasized to these kids. You know, there are kids that are, you know, 5-6 years old hearing the N-word, and what's more is they're seeing kids get away with that. They're seeing players at all levels, from peewee right on up to, you know, we saw it in junior hockey and the AHL this past year, just making these racist remarks, and a lot of them are getting away with it.
Don't know. They get punished. They have to, you know, sit out for 3 games.
Right.
Because, you know, that makes it okay. Lots of regret.
Yeah. And, yeah, if that, you know, they were saying if, you know, this black teenage player gets into a fight, they get suspended for 5 games. That's just no questions asked. And then there's these investigations that are ongoing for like 5 months. Hockey Canada is in charge of one that's ongoing, that Hockey PEI have asked for their support on. And who knows if that's an evasion tactic or what, but yeah, still unresolved.
Yeah, it's a little off the rails here. This past year, I took a course in LinkedIn Learning that talked about unconscious bias. And just going through, it was a short course, not to suggest it does anything more than maybe point to where the surface is, maybe give it a little scratch. But it alone, this very short course, I don't want to say blew my mind. That's not the way to position, but it really had me take this step back to identify that I'd like to think I'm a progressive person, to see how much unconscious bias exists within me on a variety of different topics. But that bias is everywhere. And until such time as, one, we acknowledge it, but two, look to remedy. There is no fairness. And that's a statement that's applicable beyond hockey. But this is a hockey podcast. And I saw a tweet, Rick West had retweeted it earlier, from Daniel Carcillo. And, I mean, here's a player who has been in the league. It's not, you know, two podcasters just randomly ranting on over things. He's talking about how hockey continues to deal with systemic and problematic abuse. We don't want to ruin hockey. We want to make hockey better. And then he goes on to say, under its current leadership, I don't have confidence that will happen. And that's related to the issue with Hockey Canada. But that's what he's saying, what you and I have been saying, what so many people are saying, is that hockey could be so much better. And I don't understand this resistance to the idea that it can be. I mean, hell, as misguided as someone's opinion might be that hockey's in a really good place today, it could still be better. It's not in a good place today. It can still be better.
Yeah. I honestly don't understand how any hockey fan can live through what we have observed over the past few seasons, just purely over the off season. And even as someone, as we are in the privileged position of not to be, you know, directly affected by those, you know, we're not black hockey fans. We're not, fans of color who kind of see themselves get marginalized again and again. But I just don't understand how you can, like, go through that and be unaffected and think that hockey's okay. It's not.
It's becoming increasingly difficult for me to care. And I know that that's maybe not the take that it's meant to be. But when I stop caring about hockey, you know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And I want there to be change. I want there to be a progression in the sport. I'd like myself to continue to make progress in that own personal journey that I've had. You know, I've shared on the show how growing up, I loved, you know, the Rock'em Sock'em videos. Oh yeah, that, you know, that player got his bell rung, or like the just absolutely destructive hits, the dirty stuff. Oh, it was great. I loved all that. I grew up in a culture that embraced words by trying to say, oh, they're just words, they don't matter. They do matter, and I now know this. If I can evolve, so can hockey, as we know it. I think, you know, like what fixes it in Hockey Canada? I cleaning house doesn't. And I'm not suggesting they don't clean house. They should. But cleaning house on its own isn't enough. It is quite frankly a systemic shift that has to occur. And it has to not only happen at the top, it needs to start to be ingrained at the grassroots level. The tolerance of, oh, it happened on the ice, or it was just emotions, needs to go straight out the window. And that's, you know, I grew up in soccer. While I was never going to be a star soccer player, I enjoyed refereeing, and I became dedicated to that role, and had an opportunity to be selected for some high caliber youth play here in the province, as well as some adult play when I was younger. And I had a very firm interpretation of what foul, abusive, and insulting language would be. And there would be things that would be said that should never have even been considered a thought in a player's mind. And if I heard it, I dealt with it. I dealt with it harshly because I did not tolerate it. And the advice that I was given, if I wanted to make it, try to maybe put some earplugs in. Now, I'm not suggesting that, oh, Chris was like the light that soccer BC needed to, you know, fix the issues. But that's not like 40 years ago. I mean, that's 15. It's still many years. But that was what I was told. If I wanted to make it, I had to turn a blind ear, or a deaf ear. Sorry, I was going to say a blind eye, but a deaf ear to that language.
Yeah.
That's soccer. That's in Canada. That's, you know, it is not just hockey. It is all sport.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Canada has a history with racism that is really not comfortable kind of looking at. You kind of think this kind of discourse that, you know, anti-black racism is in the States and we don't really have a problem with it up here, but it's definitely not the case. Hockey is a very white sport. It's a very privileged sport. And people aren't used to seeing difference, and that's not an excuse. But it's definitely a part explanation why it happens, and it's just been going on for so long unchecked.
I honestly think it comes down to an acknowledgement that the change will be hard.
Yeah.
And so it can be someone else's problem to fix.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we can't change anything about those who've grown up in the system. So the kids, the new ones, we'll sort it out there, who are watching everything in front of them. Like, you know, I was talking to a friend whose kids are in hockey, and she had said how she tries not to get to the rink too early because she doesn't want her kids to watch an older group of players play because of some of the things that have been said and have occurred on the ice. Why is it that she's making that decision? It's because she knows that her kids would see that and think, oh, that might be okay. Or, you know, it's okay here. When I'm older, I'll be able to do that. Like, it might not be that I'll do it today, but I might do it tomorrow. But then let's fast forward. Like, they see this take place at a junior hockey game in the Maritimes. They see it happen, you know, at the rink, in an NHL barn.
Yeah. I mean, the legacy, as you say, they keep putting it off, and that's what we're dealing with. We've talked about homophobia in the league, you know, some weak punishments, the language used around the locker room. NHL's yet to have a active, openly gay player. Might happen pretty soon if Luke Prokop makes it into the league in a couple of years, but yet to happen. Players of color. There was 7% of the league was a player of color in 2011. It's gone down to below 5 in 2020. Like, this is the legacy of failing to deal with discrimination at all levels, because, like, players of color are just going to have to keep exiting the sport because they don't feel welcome.
And I, you know, on that note, I think there are still far too many people who would say, well, no, the reason it's gone down has nothing to do with discrimination, because the league is far less discriminatory than it was in the past. There's just simply not enough, you know, players who are capable. And now that it's all equal and truly equitable amongst everyone, everyone's got a fair shot. Well, that's not the case at all. I mean, I it drives me nuts when I hear people talk about, well, everything's equitable. No, it's not. It never has been. Yeah, it might be better than it once was before, but that doesn't mean equitable.
Yeah, and you'd have to say that the political climate, particularly in North America, though I'd say globally, since 2016 or thereabouts, has become more divisive, and there's been more discrimination against minorities.
Yeah.
The global discourse. So,
we're not going to shy away from it on the podcast. I mean, these are topics that we've talked about all year long. As unfortunate as it might be, like, I think that's the worst part, is that it wasn't something that happened and then not got fixed or dealt with, just moved on. This is constant.
Yeah,
like, we're not going back and rehashing that problem from June.
Yeah.
And we haven't even brought up the fact that, you know, the Vancouver Canucks have their own problems in their front office that are happening. And hey, it's going to be something that will unfortunately be a topic on our show for far too long. It's like, I can predict the future. And that's the sad part. It's dark.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow,
but you know what, like, when the problem's not going to be fixed under our watch, right? But
no, I know
what
that.
We want to report is progress. Yeah. And we haven't seen a ton of it.
I honestly don't know if we will, until something so critical takes place, whether it be in NHL, whether it be in Hockey Canada, it feels wrong to discount everything that has happened to this point as not being critical enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's embarrassing that these things keep coming out and nothing changes.
Yeah.
Anywho. To finish on a positive note, I did at the film get to meet Soraya Tinker of the PHF, player cool. for the Toronto Six, and she's signed a endorsement deal recently, which is pretty historic for the PHF. and she's super glamorous, super lovely. I did wish her the best of luck for the upcoming season, but not too much luck because I still obviously want the Connecticut Whale to win. But she was super lovely, so it was really that was a cool moment.
And you, when's she joining us on the show?
We didn't get to that.
Oh, okay. I mean, first conversation, you broke the ice, the follow-up, I presume.
The follow-up, she will join us on the show.
Okay. That might be a fantasy of ours to have, you know, stellar guests such as herself. But on the topic of fantasy, we talked a little bit about whether or not there was interest in having a C4 Fantasy Hockey League. There has been interest expressed. A league has been set up. The commissioner is Anders. Everyone might know him as a loud brother in C4 Discord and online. He has got things rolling. There are a number of teams already registered, including me, which, I mean, if you're playing Light Forces Bunch of Scrubs, that's like guaranteed win week.
That's not very Ted Lasso of you, but okay.
Believe you will beat Light Forces Bunch of Scrubs.
I hope you call them that.
It is Light Forces Bunch of Scrubs.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Mine as the same team name as ever, Anna's fancy team.
Oh, so fancy.
But looking forward to another season of fancy. Thank you, Anders, for stepping up.
The draft is on Wednesday, right?
Yes.
So if you want to
be set for that.
Yeah. If anyone wants in on this, you're listening to the episode right this second. Look at your watch. Is it Wednesday? You need to get in on this. The information's on C4 Discord. If you reach out to us, myself or Anna, we could probably get the info to you as well. But yeah, draft is on Wednesday. And he was the keeper of the list. We just haven't done anything list worthy, you and I. That was a mad thing.
I just kind of use that as an example of how trustworthy Anders is.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, let's get in on that. Come beat Light Forces Bunch of Scrubs. But here we are at the end of a show where we didn't get to talk a little bit about a Vancouver Canucks preseason with a win. Did not happen tonight. They did not have a, you know, thrilling comeback in the final 3 minutes of the game at Edmonton. So it's possible they might beat the Oilers in Abbotsford. It might be possible to beat the Coyotes in Vancouver on Friday. Who knows? But it's just the preseason. The sky is not yet falling. Okay. Anna, calm down. I know you're getting all agitated here.
Chicken Little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, which again is kind of weird because we were here last week. We're here this week in the season is kind of starting, but it's Canadian Thanksgiving and we are taking some much needed time off because we haven't had enough ourselves.
But yes, we are kind of looking forward to cover hockey that counts, you know, and then we can be Chicken Little, the sky's falling, because we will have played games for actual points by the time our next episode is. So,
yeah, I mean, we're certainly adequate when healthy. Right. I wonder, I'd steal taglines from just everything. I am totally going to change our tagline. Certainly adequate when healthy. But then how is certainly adequate compared to best mediocre? Are they like
I think they go hand in hand. I'm just wondering if we're going to run out of a character count here.
Oh, longest totally.
Running best mediocre, certainly adequate when healthy.
Yeah. New episode. Link. That's it. You got to listen to the show to find out what we talk about in that tweet. Cause we've run out of characters. Or is it bad form to have a thread? Tweet one is our entire run intro tagline and all that. And then tweet two is the actual, you know, show notes, Twitter form.
Yeah. But that would be every tweet we send.
True.
Has to be in two parts.
Yeah. Maybe you have an opinion on this, maybe you don't, but the best way to tell us about it is by joining C4 Discord and getting in on the conversation there. It's discord.io/C4podcast. You can have a good old time in Gate 16 with us. If you happen to be a Kraken fan, there's a Pike Place channel that gets unused. That's just to delineate the Kraken chatter from the Canucks chatter and then off topic where everything else takes place in. we can be reached and provided with a voicemail, of which, hey, I did not check to see if we had any this week. But while I quickly do that, if you haven't dropped us a message, it's very easy to do. You just go to speakpipe.com/C4podcast. And that will in turn allow you to use your browser, your mobile device to record an audio message that we in turn can include in an upcoming episode. And if you ask us a question, answer. Yes. Be honest, you could ask us anything. We will probably answer it.
We want takes on whether preseason matters or not. And if you want to leave a message with your take and then change your mind after the season starts, that's also okay. We'll play both and embarrass you. But
yeah, it's just how we roll. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you probably already do. You follow us on Twitter. It's at the C4 podcast or facebook.com/the C4podcast. But yeah, that's it. Any final words of wisdom there, Anna?
I just never want to see Canucks lose to Seattle Kraken when it counts, so make that the last time that you are stunned by Alex Wenberg's good looks and can't concentrate on hockey, Canucks, because we can't tolerate that anymore.
Well, October 27th is your next opportunity to see whether or not that takes place when the Canucks head down to Seattle to go meet Boy the Troll.
Quite.
Yeah. On behalf of Anna A4603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, signing off this episode with We Out.